Luke chapter 15, would encourage you to get your Bible out and turn there. Luke chapter 15, we're going to get right into the Word this morning. And I want to begin reading in Luke chapter 15, beginning at verse 11 on this day that we honor our fathers. I want us to talk about the greatest story of a father and two sons this morning. Luke chapter 15, beginning at verse 11. There was a man who had two sons, and the younger of them said to his father, "Father, give me the share of property that is coming to me." And he divided his property between them. Not many days later, the younger son gathered all that he had and took a journey into a far country. And there he squandered his property in reckless living. And when he had spent everything, a severe famine arose in that country, and he began to be in need. So he went and hired himself out to one of the citizens of that country, who sent him into his fields to feed pigs. And he was longing to be fed with the pods that the pigs ate, and no one gave him anything. But when he came to himself, he said, "How many of my father's hired servants have more than enough bread, but I perish here with hunger? I will arise and go to my father, and I will say to him, 'Father, I have sinned against heaven and before you. I am no longer worthy to be called your son. Treat me as one of your hired servants.' And he arose and came to his father. But while he was still a long way off, his father saw him and felt compassion and ran and embraced him and kissed him. And the son said to him, 'Father, I have sinned against heaven and before you. I am no longer worthy to be called your son.' But the father said to his servants in verse 22, 'Bring quickly the best robe and put it on him. Put a ring on his hand and shoes on his feet. And bring the fattened calf and kill it. And let us eat and celebrate. For this my son was dead and is alive again. He was lost and is found.' And they began to celebrate. Now his older son was in the field. And as he came and drew near to the house, he heard music and dancing. And he called one of the servants and asked what these things meant. And he said to him, 'Your brother has come home, and your father has killed the fattened calf because he has received him back safe and sound.' But he was angry and refused to go in. His father came out and entreated him, but he answered his father, 'Look, these many years I have served you, and I have never disobeyed your command. Yet you never gave me a young goat that I might celebrate with my friends. But when this son of yours came, who has devoured your property with prostitutes, you killed the fattened calf for him.' And he said to him, 'Son, you are always with me, and all that is mine is yours. It was fitting to celebrate and be glad, for this your brother was dead and is alive. He was lost and is found.'" Now, baseball season is in full swing, and I was reminded as I was watching some highlights of some baseball games about someone who made the observation between the difference between football and baseball. And he talked about football being very barbaric, and baseball is a much more gentle sport than football. A football player comes in to kick something. A baseball player comes in to relieve someone. A football game has a 2-minute warning. A baseball game has the 7-inning stretch. A football player stiff arms, but in baseball, the baseball player slides, and that sounds nicer. The object in football is to battle in the trenches with the QB, to see the blitz from the enemy, and to throw a lot of bullets, and you drop back into the zone, you throw a long bomb to get into enemy territory. But in baseball, the goal is simple, to just get home. That's the goal, to just get home and be safe at home. And I think our faith is a lot like that, that the goal of our faith is to get home. And ultimately, that goal is achieved when this life is over, when eternity begins, and we go home to be with our Heavenly Father. But there is a sense right here, right now, that we can be at home with God. In Proverbs chapter 14, at verse 23, Jesus said, "If anyone loves me, he will keep my word, and my Father will love him, and we will come to him and make our home with him." And so you see in that passage, there's a sense that home can be described when we are living in fellowship with our Heavenly Father, when we submit to His control, when we submit to His authority, and we live for Him, we can be at home. I think that's why Jesus would say that His mission in Luke chapter 19 was to seek and to save the lost, to go out and get the lost and to bring them back home. And in Luke chapter 15, that's really what the chapter is all about. It's about a lost sheep that gets away from the fold. It's about a lost coin that a woman loses. And in those first two parables, you see that the shepherd and the woman who loses something, they go out and they seek with all that they have to find the sheep, and they find the coin. And when they find what was missing and they bring it back into the fold, they bring it back into the house, there is cause for much celebration. And here in this story that we read in Luke chapter 15, Jesus begins with that sheep and the coin. But then he ends with a lost soul. And you know, so Jesus would tell these parables in Luke chapter 15 because of the complaint that was against him. You have to see how Luke chapter 15 begins to really get the overall idea behind this great chapter in our Bibles. In Luke 15 at verse 1, it says, "Now the tax collectors and the sinners were all drawing near to him. And the Pharisees and the scribes grumbled, saying, 'This man receives sinners and eats with them.'" You see, Jesus is really answering the grumbling and the complaining by the Pharisees, because Jesus is always around the tax collectors and sinners. In other words, he's around the people that are lost. He's around the people that are homeless, and they need to know how to get back home. And so Jesus tells this great story, beginning in Luke 15 at verse 11, and we learn about the younger son that we're going to focus on this morning, is that this younger son had one mission in this story. And his mission was this: all he wanted to accomplish in this story was to leave home. And so when he leaves home, he makes this shocking request. He goes to his father and he says, "Father, give me," notice he requests, it's really more of a demand, "give me the inheritance that is due me, that I should receive." And you think about really how dishonoring that was for this younger son to make this request, "give me my inheritance." Because really what he was saying to his father was, "I wish you were dead." Maybe you've been in a situation where you've been around the bed of a loved one. Maybe it was a father or a mother. You recognize just how inappropriate that would be at that time to lean over to your sister and say, "Well, who gets the house?" You don't do that at a time like that. That's completely inappropriate, because you're basically saying that, "Well, my parent doesn't really matter to me. I don't care about that. All I care about is his stuff." And that's what this son says by making this request. "Dad, I don't care about you. I don't love you. All I want is what you can give me right here and right now." It was a shocking request, and especially shocking to the audience of Jesus, because the audience of Jesus, the Jews, understood that parents were to be honored. Parents were to be obeyed, and they were to be very respected. And so when he makes this shocking request, you might think that the father would say, "Get out of here. Why would you make such a foolish request? There's no way that I'm going to give you this." But maybe what's more shocking than the request is the answer that the father gives. Because the father gives in to the request. In the face of being disrespected, in the face of being dishonored, he gives the son his portion of the inheritance. And it's not like the father could just go to his drawer and get out a check and write a check and say, "Here's your inheritance." This would be a huge hassle. He would have to try to figure out everything that he owned and the value of those things and liquidate things. And this was a huge hassle. And yet the father was still willing to do that, to give in to the son's request. And so the son gets his inheritance. He packs up, Jesus says, everything that he has, and he goes off into the far country. And this young man finally feels as if he is doing what he's always wanted to do. And the further and further he gets away from home, the closer and closer he gets to the far country. And I have to imagine to myself that what this young boy wanted to do was, in the far country, he wanted to get away from the control. He wanted to get away from the authority. And he wanted to get away from the restraints of home. That was his goal. That was his mission. He wanted to get away from the watchful eye of his father. He was finally finished with the questions about, "Where were you last night? Who were you with? Where are you going?" He no longer wanted to be under the control and the authority of his father. And so he gladly leaves home. And he's finally doing things his way. Reminds me of the Frank Sinatra song, My Way. You know, that's they have a list of the most popular funeral songs. Believe that or not, they have a list for those things. But My Way is the top song. I did it my way. It's the anthem of so many people. I'm going to do things my way. I'm tired of doing it your way. I'm going to do it my way. And that was the anthem of the prodigal son. He was going to do things his way. And he makes the journey off into the far country. And let's talk about that for a minute. What exactly is this far country that this young son went to? Well, I want to suggest to you this morning that the far country represents anywhere where the father is not welcomed. The far country represents any place where God's authority, God's reign, God's control, God's commands are not honored in any way, where God is completely pushed out of the picture. That's what the far country represents. And this son was going there, where the father was not there, where he didn't have to obey and observe his rules and his commands. And when he gets to the far country, well, at first, things seem to be exactly what he pictured in his mind when he left home. He shows up in the far country and he's got a pocket full of cash. Everywhere he goes, he's the life of the party. He's throwing out money and everybody around him sees all the money that he has, and everybody wants to be friends with the guy that's throwing around money. And so he has all these friends around him and he lives this life of just enjoying everything. Anything that he ever had to say no to at home, he was saying yes to in the far country. But as Jesus tells us in this story, all of that wild and riotous living quickly ended. Because when he blew through his inheritance, he's no longer the life of the party. When he spends and squanders all of his money, there's nobody around him there to be his friend. They were only friends with him because of what he had and what he could offer. But now he reaches a place where he squandered all of his inheritance and he's not quite sure what he's going to do now. And at that moment, things get even worse. Because as Jesus tells us in this story, that he squanders all of his money through this riotous and reckless living. But not only that, now there's a famine in the land. Now, for us, we might read about a famine and we don't quite grasp that. We might think a famine is when the restaurant runs out of rolls or something. But for the first century, when they heard this story, they knew all too well what a famine was. They knew what it was like. They lived at any moment a famine could strike and they could go hungry. They were familiar with the pictures and the images in the Old Testament about women during a famine who would cook and boil their own babies. And so they would have this image in their mind when they hear the word famine, that this is a bad situation and it's gotten worse for this son because now he has nothing to eat with no money. And so now he's so hungry, as Jesus tells us, that he goes out, he hires himself in verse 15 to one of the citizens of that country who sent him into the field to feed pigs. That can't get much worse for a Jew. Any self-respecting Jew would not want this job to be right in the middle of a pig pen of an unclean animal. But yet this is where this young son finds himself. He finds himself right in the middle of a pig pen and he's so desperate. He's so hungry that he's looking at the pods that the pigs were eating and he's just saying, well, I wish I could take a bite of that. But the problem was it didn't belong to him. It was his boss's. And so wouldn't you agree that at this moment, at this time, when the young son leaves and goes off into the far country and he's blown through all of his inheritance and he ends up in a pig pen, wouldn't you agree with me that this young man has hit rock bottom? That in the pig pen, it can't get much worse than that. But there's something good that can happen, that can come out of the pig pen. For someone who's hit rock bottom, it's much like smelling salt for the unconscious person. It has the ability to wake us up, to help us see the error of our ways. And in this moment, in the far country, there is something critical that happens in the life of this young son that I want us to look at this morning. I want you to notice that while he is in the pig pen, that he has his light bulb moment. He finally comes to the realization of some very important things. And he decides in the pig pen at rock bottom that he wants to go home. But going home takes three things, and I want to suggest to you three things this morning. First of all, coming home requires a sudden awakening. It requires a sudden awakening. I want you to notice in verse 17, when he's looking at the pig food and he's just so hungry, notice what Jesus says in verse 17. Verse 17 says, the young son, when he came to himself, your version might say, when he came to his senses, when he finally realized why he was in the pig pen, he had his awakening. He had his aha moment. And all of a sudden, things begin to clear up in his mind. And first of all, what he sees in this sudden awakening is he realizes the emptiness of the far country. You know, before he left and he's packing up all his belongings and he's getting his inheritance ready and he's planning his trip, I imagine in my mind, the text doesn't say this, but imagine in my mind that the father maybe pled with the young son. He let him go. He gave him the free will to go. But son, are you sure you want to go? Listen, the far country isn't what you think it is. Bad things happen there. Bad people there. Please don't go. Let me tell you something. The younger son had already made up his mind. And when dad may be pleading with him, saying, don't go, son. The younger son already had in his mind that there was nothing that was going to stop him. You see, he'd seen the images and the ads. He scrolled through the Instagram ads of the far country. And he's seen the brochure on Facebook about how great the far country looks. And he's looked and seen all that the far country has to offer. And he's seen all the people there that are having a great time. And he's decided that that's the place that he wants to be. And you see, I want you to understand that when it comes to the far country of leaving the restraints and the authority and the control of God, the far country has a great marketing campaign. The far country can take this place where God is not welcome and make it appealing. They can make it look really, really good. I mean, the far country says, drink as much beer as you want to drink. The far country says, get in bed with as many people as you can. You do whatever it is that you can do to make you happy and don't worry about anybody else. You see, the far country can make things so appealing. But the problem is that in the far country, the brochures of the far country and the ads of the far country never tell you the whole story. You see, the campaign never tells you the devastating effects of living in the far country. But maybe you've seen them. Maybe you've looked into the eyes of someone who took a journey to the far country. And you've looked in their eyes and you've seen the devastating effects of a person who left home and went to the far country because they bought into the marketing campaign. And you can look in their eyes and you can see that they've come to the realization that it did not deliver as advertised. You can look at them, or maybe you can look at yourself in the mirror and realize that it did not deliver as advertised. That they didn't tell me the entire truth about going to the far country. They didn't tell me that I'd end up living like a pig, just like this young son. You see, we have to say Jesus loves sinners, and he does. But Jesus hates sin. He hates sin because he knows what it does to people. And look at where this young son ends up. He ends up in a place where pigs are more valuable than he is. He ends up in a place where pigs are taken care of first. And so, here's the thing about the pig pen. Is that it can challenge the way that we think. It can challenge our senses. It can challenge our mind, where we can wake up to the realization that we've been lied to. And so coming home requires a sudden awakening. But second of all, coming home requires brutal honesty. It requires brutal honesty. And first of all, I want to suggest that he was honest about who was to blame. He was honest about who was to blame in this situation. When the young son came to himself, when he came to his senses, he realized that he could no longer play the victim. He could never say that he was broke and homeless because of somebody else. He had to be brutally honest with himself. Now, he could have blamed several people. He could have blamed his father and said, well, you know, if Dad would have just cash at me a few times, you know, he could have helped me get through this bad situation. Or he could say, you know, if my brother wasn't such a goody two-shoes, if I didn't have to grow up with him, I would have never made this decision. Or he could have blamed God and said, God, if you wouldn't have put me in this family, in this situation, well, I would have never have ended up here. Why do you allow me to go through so much suffering and so much pain? You see, he could have blamed everyone. And maybe if you're honest with yourself, you've been there. And because of your sin, you've ended up in the pig pen. And maybe you've tried to blame a spouse. If she or if he would be the person that God would want them to be, this wouldn't be so hard. Maybe you blame the church and say, oh, you know that church over there, they didn't do anything for me and they're just a bunch of hypocrites and that's why I don't go anymore. Or maybe you blame God. Say, God, you've given me a bad hand and I just can't do it anymore. Hey, maybe you've heard it all. And you see, really, that's the strategy that's been around from the very beginning. In the very beginning, when Adam rejected the rule and the authority of God, remember that he ended up blaming God for giving him his wife Eve. It was the woman who made me eat. See, that's been the blame game from the very beginning. And so he realized that he had no one else to blame but himself. And he realized that he had sinned. I want you to notice this. It's subtle, but I want you to notice this. Notice what he says. In verse 18, he says, Father, I have sinned. See, he's being brutally honest. He doesn't say, I'm going to go back and you know, when I see Dad, I'm going to say, Dad, if I sinned against you. We've done that, haven't we? Well, if I've done anything wrong, well, please forgive me. No, he takes full responsibility. And he doesn't say, if I have sinned. He says, I have sinned against you. No ifs in that statement. And that's really a great indication that the light bulb is coming on. It's a great indication that you're no longer rationalizing sin, but you're realizing what sin does to you. And notice in this speech that he rehearses to his father, when he goes and talks about, I'm no longer worthy to be called your son, treat me as one of your hired servants. He knows what he's going to say to his father, but notice what he doesn't rehearse. He doesn't say, Dad, boys will be boys. You know how we are. We just got to go out and sow our wild oats for a little while. Boy, you know, I just really wanted to go get that out of my system for a little while. He doesn't do that. He doesn't say that at all. You see, he recognized that sin had separated him from his father. And he was brutally honest about his sin and himself. But then he's also brutally honest about life back home. See, he comes to this great realization about life back home. In verse 17, when he comes to himself, he says, how many of my father's hired servants have more than enough bread, but I perish here with hunger? In other words, my father's servants have it better than I do. In other words, he's realizing that life under the control and the authority of Dad isn't so bad. He's coming to the realization that that's really where he needs to be. And that takes a while sometimes. Because maybe you look around at home and look at the relationships that you have with your parents or with your spouse or with your church family or your relationship with God. And you really just make up a situation that doesn't really exist. And once again, you start playing that blame game. And you just kind of rewrite history and act as if you were never loved. And if you never had anybody show you compassion. But the younger son comes to the realization that life back home, there was love that was there. He had everything he needed at home. He had everything that he desired. And in that moment, he went from being sick of home to being homesick. And so he wants to go home. And so coming home requires a sudden awakening. It requires brutal honesty. Because he realized, you don't have to go off into the far country. Everything that you need is right there at home. And so here's an important step that we can't stop. Coming home requires action. Coming home requires action. You see, this son came to the realization of something very important. When he came to himself, he realized that he did not have to stay in the pig pen. He didn't. He came to the realization that he could make the choice to get up. And sometimes, maybe you've been in the pig pen. Maybe you're in the pig pen this morning, and you're allowing that situation, whatever it is that made you go off into the far country and be in a severe famine spiritually in your life, maybe you're allowing that situation to define yourself. You're allowing that situation to just basically define your life. Maybe you've struggled with some addiction in your life, or maybe it's been a divorce, or maybe you just have some bitter, unforgiving attitudes in your life, and you allow that trip to the far country to become your identity. And you just give up. And you just say, you know, I really would like to go home, but I think my time has passed. I'd really like to go home, but I just think it's too late. I'd really like to go home, and today might be a good day, but not today. I think I'll wait for another opportunity. But notice in verse 20, when he comes to himself, he rehearses his speech. In verse 20, it simply says, he arose. He arose. He got up. He didn't just wallow in the pig pen. When he came to himself, he got up. He took action. You see, it's one thing to have a sudden awakening. It's one thing to be brutally honest with yourself. But none of that does any good unless you get up and take action. And if you're here this morning and you're in the pig pen, I hope your light bulb is coming on. I hope that you're being honest with yourself. But understand that nothing in your life is going to change until you get up and take action. So let me ask you this question. What's your far country? What's your far country? What is it in your life, in an area of your life, where you don't want God to have any control? Where God is not welcome? What's your far country? But second of all, when are you going to wake up? When are you going to be brutally honest with yourself and say, this sin, this secret sin, this addiction, it's killing me, it's destroying me. When are you going to be honest with yourself? And you might be going through all of that, and you might be ready to get up. But you're thinking, what's it going to be like when I go home? What's it going to be like when I go home? I want us to think about this great father in this story as we close. Because when we get to this point of the story, it seems different to us than the other two stories. Remember when the sheep is lost, well, the shepherd leaves the 99 and goes out and gets the lost sheep. And you remember in the story of the woman who lost her coin, well, she tears her house up. She is a frantic search for this lost coin. And we might think, well, in this story, the father's not really searching for a son. Well, hold on just a minute. Because how in the world would he be able to recognize that his son was way out in the distance if he wasn't looking for his son? See, think about the son. Think about the son making the journey through the village. And as he's rehearsed this statement of what he's going to say to his father, I have no doubt that in his mind he's wondering, what's it going to be like when I get home? And maybe he's played out in his mind that he's going to get home, he's going to get to the farm, and he's going to go out into the barn, and he's going to see some of his dad's servants and say, hey, he's kind of have his head down, hey, is dad around? He said, no, he went into town. He'll be back later on. Just go sit right over there on that stool. Maybe he'll be back. You can talk to him then. Or maybe he's picturing in his mind that he's going to go home and he's going to see his dad, and his dad and brother are going to be out working and providing, and he's going to walk up to his dad with his head down, and his dad's just going to kind of grunt at him a little bit and say, sit out over there. Once we finish up this hard work, then I'll talk to you. And by the way, don't grab any food. Don't take anything. It's not yours. Maybe that's what he's thinking this entire time as he's walking through the village. But that's not how the story goes at all. That's not how the story goes at all, because of his trip to the far country, he's coming back home. This is a different type of reunion, because as he's walking, I might not walk too fast, I guess, if I was making that trip home. And so the father is on the porch looking for his son. And when he sees his son, here's the amazing part of this story. Here's the amazing part of this story. That the son, in his shame, is going home. But the father gets up and he runs to his son. Now, we might read that and miss really the great point of that. Because in that society, heads of family, fathers, they didn't run. It was very undignified for them to do that. Because for them to run, that would require them to hike up their robe. And they would just be very undignified. That's not anything that they would do. It would be shameful for them to do that. But in that moment, when the father is waiting for his son to come home and he sees his son at a far distance, what's the father do? The father gets up, he hikes up his robe, and he goes running after his son. The father takes the shame on himself. And he runs to his son. And I want you to know this morning that if you've reached this point where you want to come home, you, like this young son, will come home to a loving embrace. You will come home to a loving embrace. You see, the father had open arms. You might be worried that when you go home, that maybe your earthly father would just kind of cross his arms and say, "How'd that work out for you?" Or you might think you come home and the father has his arms crossed and says, "Well, what do you have to say for yourself? Look at what you've done to the family name." But the best way that we can welcome back a prodigal son or daughter is with open arms, with a loving embrace, just like this father. He runs to his son and he just kisses and slobbers all over him. He's thrilled to have his son back home. And there's a great celebration. Because this my son was dead. And he is alive again. He doesn't say, he run up to his son and say, "Oh man, you smell terrible. Well, go in and shower. And then we'll talk." No, he takes the son and he embraces him. Dirty, filthy and all. So this morning, what are you waiting for? What are you waiting for? What's stopping you from coming home? Why would you spend another moment? Why would you spend another moment in the pig pen when you can realize that the Father is waiting with open arms to celebrate your return? Think about all that you're missing out on by living in the pig pen and not being in the Father's house. You've got an opportunity this morning to come home. To come home to a loving embrace. To come to a church family that will welcome you with open arms and embrace you and welcome you into the fold. If you need to come home this morning, maybe by obeying the gospel and being immersed in water for the forgiveness of your sins, you can do that. Maybe you've done that, you've gone off into the far country, and you want to come home. Come home right here, right now, while we stand and sing.